Welcome to Wild Utah, the podcast of the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. I'm Dave Pacheco. In this episode, we talk with SUA staff attorney Landon Newell about a decision by the Utah Bureau of Land Management to propose a helium drilling project within the newly established Labyrinth Canyon Wilderness Area. In the spring of 2019, while Congress was preparing Utah's contribution within Emery County to the John Dingell Conservation Management and Recreation Act, the Trump administration sold a lease for development just a few weeks before the bill became law. In their fire sale, as so often we've found with this administration's tactics over the past 4 years, they did not prepare any site-specific environmental analysis as required by NEPA, and they did not allow for any public participation. Landon was part of SUA's team that protested the December 2018 lease sale that this parcel was a part of. Landon, thanks for joining us and for shedding some light on yet another in a long series of outrageous actions on public lands by Trump's Bureau of Land Management.
Happy to be here, Dave.
So, Landon, give us a little background first on this issue. Tell us about where exactly this proposed drilling project is, and is it really inside the recently established new wilderness area in Labyrinth Canyon?
So the lease that is proposed for development here is located on the west side of the Green River, just to the north of the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area and the Canyonlands National Park. This is one of the most remote regions of the San Rafael Desert. And this lease, as you mentioned, Dave, was sold at BLM's December 2018 oil and gas lease sale. And BLM sold this lease without allowing for public participation in the leasing decision, and they rushed it through so that they could issue the lease weeks before the area became designated as wilderness.
So what would be the footprint of such an operation? What would this look like?
The proposal is for one to as many as seven wells drilled into the wilderness area. And this would include drill rigs, pipelines, road construction, and the construction of a 10-acre processing plant.
It sounds like a full-on industrialization of this very remote area.
It would industrialize one of the most remote areas of the San Rafael Desert.
So in terms of its impact on the wilderness values, I mean, that sounds pretty obvious, but what about its impact to specific resources like land, air, water, and other natural qualities? You know, kind of tell us a little bit about what makes this particular area so special and unique.
So this area is unique for a number of reasons. The San Rafael Desert is really remote. It's quiet. It provides expansive views. It's home to wildlife, including endemic pollinator species. And this development would bring large vehicle traffic, pipelines, and noise to this otherwise quiet and remote region of Red Rock Wilderness.
Well, that sounds like a travesty, and I think making matters worse was what we talked about earlier in the introduction, how the Bureau of Land Management bypassed site-specific environmental analysis as required by the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, which we've talked about on prior episodes of this podcast. So how did they justify their fast-tracking of this lease sale?
So this whole proposal from the beginning has been a concentrated effort to get in line with the Trump administration's energy dominance agenda. Soon after taking office, the Trump administration quickly moved to streamline oil and gas leasing and development, and that included the elimination of public participation in leasing decisions, and it also eliminated or significantly reduced the agency's obligations to consider all of the impacts of oil and gas development. And many of those controversial decisions by the Trump administration have been held up in court or held to be unlawful. But this lease is a byproduct of that energy dominance agenda. And the development on the lease is being pushed through at the end of the administration, and it's getting pushed through as quickly as possible.
So are there any tools left in the legal box that SUA and its conservation allies have to protest the lease at this point?
There are. The whole team at SUA has been actively working on this project. The legal team has been preparing comments on the proposal. The grassroots team has been working on outreach and media support. And there's a whole range of things the public can do. They can comment on BLM's proposal. they can pay attention to the news, because this is very controversial and will be noted and discussed in local and national newspapers. And if you see anything reported on this, it's extremely helpful to have the public's voice heard in this decision. And that would mean responding to articles you see in the newspaper, writing letters to the editor, making sure that people know that this proposal is unacceptable and that it's highly controversial.
Well, we'll certainly push that angle. I know that we're all working hard to make sure that people know about this. One more aspect I want people to know about, though, that we talked about in the introduction, was that BLM bypassed the public participation phase entirely when they sold this lease. Tell us a little bit more specifically about how that happened and how it was justified by the agency.
Sure. So what happened traditionally under the Obama administration is, prior to any leasing decision, the Bureau of Land Management would allow the public a 30-day comment period. We could weigh in, voice our concerns, and the BLM would have to respond to those concerns. That was all thrown out with the energy dominance agenda of the Trump administration. And for this lease sale, there was no comment period. Instead, what happened is the BLM posted a signed final leasing decision to its project website, and that started a short, truncated 10-day protest period. And so essentially, the public's voice wasn't allowed to weigh in on this decision until after it had already been made. And making matters worse, all of this was happening as Congress was moving the Dingell Act towards passage. BLM knew that, and as a result, they rushed to issue this lease in February of 2019. And only 1 month later, Congress passed the Dingell Act, which designated more than 500,000 acres of land in Emery County as wilderness, including the Labyrinth Canyon Wilderness Area.
Well, that certainly is a subject that people can write about. It needs to be heard that this project completely lacked participation by the public. They took away that opportunity, and so people are going to need to use their letters to the editor as that opportunity to voice their opinions, because they didn't get it in the first place. But I want to also, on the same subject, turn to a question about kind of legal challenges based on this concept of lack of public participation. I know SUA has done those before. We've commented that there were no public participation periods here. Do those sorts of challenges succeed in court?
They have succeeded. Most notably, the BLM has been ordered to cancel certain oil and gas leases that it issued across the West, in part due to the lack of opportunity for the public to participate.
So, moving on to another interesting aspect of this, Landon, I find it intriguing that under the Obama administration, this area was included in the San Rafael Desert Master Leasing Plan. That plan, similar to one adopted for the Moab area, would have predetermined where public leases could and could not be offered. It was a sort of look at existing values, resources, and environment before considering leasing management style approach that emphasize scientific analysis rather than simply letting prospectors, in this case the industry, drive the agenda by telling the agency where they wanted to drill. So tell us what happened to the master leasing plan in this area, and why does that matter?
The master leasing plan concept, as you mentioned, Dave, was a effort by the Obama administration to get things right from the beginning. It can be viewed, and we often describe it as a think first, lease later approach to the management of this area, rather than what we see now, which is act first, think later. And why the master leasing plan is relevant here is that in that process, the BLM started that process during the Obama administration. And during their analysis, they recognized they needed to get a lot more information and data before they could move forward with oil and gas leasing. And that included new information for lands with wilderness characteristics, new information for climate, new information for air quality, for wildlife, for water resources. The list was quite long. And they started the process to collect and analyze all of that information so that they could make an informed leasing decision. Unfortunately, after the Trump administration came into office and as part of the energy dominance agenda, the master leasing plan concept across the West, and including in Utah, was eliminated. And so the San Rafael Desert Master Leasing Plan essentially made it to the halfway point, and then the Trump administration eliminated that plan. And notably here, as you mentioned in the intro, when the lease was offered, the BLM didn't do any analysis. And so even though they had recognized prior that they needed to gain more knowledge and information, when it came to the offering of this lease, they ignored all of those prior statements. They did not collect the analysis they said was needed. They did not analyze the impacts they said they needed to. And instead, they rushed the leasing decision through at the last minute without any analysis and without any public participation.
Well, hopefully all of that adds up to a strong legal case that you and your colleagues here at SUA can make to get this thing stopped. It sounds compelling, but as we found, the most compelling argument still needs to be argued vigorously. So good luck with that. I want to move on to a subject here about the drilling itself. You know, so far this drilling has not started. Is this a done deal at this point? Just explain to us where we're at in the process and what SUA is doing from today forward to protect this Labyrinth Canyon wilderness.
So it is not a done deal that drilling will happen. Where we are in the process is that at the moment, and for about another week or so, the agency is accepting public comment on this proposal. We will submit comments on the proposal, and then we will continue to engage as it moves forward. During this time, it's extremely important that the public has their voice heard, either through submitting comments themselves or, as we mentioned, writing letters to the editor. The development is being pushed through quickly, and this is because it is highly controversial and there's a looming presidential election, which could significantly alter the world that we operate in and the ability for the operator to move this development proposal forwards. So all that is to say that we will be watching it closely and we will be engaged at every opportunity we can. And the public should actively monitor this project themselves and keep an eye out for any alerts or emails or requests from SUA asking for help in fighting this terrible proposal.
Well, listeners, I think that by the time this episode goes to press, that you will have the opportunity in front of you in the form of email alerts from SUA. Certainly on SUA's homepage, it will be the lead article in our homepage that you can use the links there to make comments. This is, again, one of those moments where winning in the public forum means something. So people voicing their opinion often do stand in the way of losing wilderness like this. We encourage everyone listening to watch for news about the issue. And as Lannon mentioned, when you read an article pertaining to this, write a letter to the editor in response stating your opposition to drilling in the Labyrinth Canyon wilderness. If you need help or advice with writing, please don't hesitate to email issues-action@sua.org. That's issues-action@sua.org. Lannon, thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate you shedding some light on this developing situation.
Thank you, Dave.
Wild Utah is recorded at SUA's main office in Salt Lake City on equipment purchased through the generosity of our members. Our theme music is written and performed in Moab by Haley Noel Austin. Post-studio production and editing is by Jerry Schmidt. To stay informed about current events at SUA, visit us at sua.org and click on Get Involved to discover how you can join the movement to protect Wild Utah. To receive information and alerts via text messages, text the word UTAH to 52886. That's text the word UTAH to the number 52886. Follow the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance on Facebook, on Instagram at Protect Wild Utah, and on Twitter at Southern UT Wild. And be sure to subscribe to the Wild Utah podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. Visit sua.org/podcast for additional ways to subscribe and to access our archive of previous episodes. On behalf of SUA, I'm Dave Pacheco. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We hope you can join us for the next episode of Wild Utah.